Chapter 49, Ill-Motivated Dhritarashtra. Thus ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Akrura visited Hastinapur, which is said to be the site of what is now known as New Delhi. The part of New Delhi, still known as Indraprastha, is accepted by people in general as the old capital of the Pandavas. The very name Hastinapur suggests that there were many hastis, or elephants, because the Pandavas kept many elephants in the capital, and so it was called Hastinapur. Keeping elephants is very expensive, and to keep many elephants, therefore, the kingdom must be very rich. And Hastinapur, as Akrura saw when he reached it, was full of elephants, horses, chariots, and other opulences. The kings of Hastinapur were taken to be the ruling kings of the whole world. Their fame was widely spread throughout the entire kingdom, and their administration was conducted under the good counsel of learned Brahmins. After seeing the very opulent capital city, Akrura met with King Dhritarashtra. He also saw Grandfather Bhishma sitting with him. After meeting them, he went to see Vidura and then Kunti, Akrura's cousin. One after another, he saw King Bhalika and his son Somadatta, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Karna, and Suyodhana, which is another name of Duryodhana. Then Akrura saw the son of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama, as well as the five Pandava brothers and other friends and relatives living in the city. All those who met Akrura, who's known also as the son of Gandini, were very much pleased to receive him and inquire about the welfare of their respective relatives. He was offered a good seat at these receptions, and Akrura in turn inquired all about the welfare and activities of his relatives. Since he was deputed by Lord Krishna to visit Hastinapur, it is understood that he was very intelligent in studying a diplomatic situation. Dhritarashtra was unlawfully occupying the throne after the death of King Pandu, despite the presence of Pandu's sons. Akrura could understand very well that ill-motivated Dhritarashtra was much inclined in favor of his own sons. In fact, Dhritarashtra had already usurped the kingdom and was now intriguing to dispose of the five Pandava brothers. Akrura knew that all the sons of Dhritarashtra, headed by Duryodhana, were very crooked politicians. Dhritarashtra did not act in accordance with the good instructions given by Bhishma and Vidura. Instead, he was being conducted by the ill instructions of such persons as Karna and Shakuni. Akrura decided to stay in Hastinapur for a few months to study the whole political situation. Gradually, Akrura learned from Kunti and Vidura that the sons of Dhritarashtra were intolerant and envious of the five Pandava brothers because of their extraordinary learning in military science and their greatly developed bodily strength. The Pandavas acted as truly chivalrous heroes. They exhibited all the good qualities of Kshatriyas, and they were very responsible princes, always thinking of the welfare of the citizens. Akrura also learned that the envious sons of Dhritarashtra had tried to kill the Pandavas by poisoning them. Akrura happened to be one of the cousins of Kunti. Therefore, after meeting him, she began to inquire about her paternal relatives. Thinking of her birthplace and beginning to cry, she asked Akrura whether her father, mother, brothers, sisters, and other friends at home still remembered her. She especially inquired about Krishna and Balaram, her glorious nephews. Does Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very affectionate to his devotees, does he remember my sons? Does Balaram remember us? Inside herself, Kunti felt like a she-deer in the midst of tigers. And actually, her position was like that. After the death of her husband, King Pandu, she was supposed to take care of the five Pandava children. But the sons of Dhritarashtra were always planning to kill them. She was certainly living like a poor, innocent animal in the midst of several tigers. Being a devotee of Lord Krishna, she always thought of him and expected that one day Krishna would come and save them from their dangerous position. She inquired from Akrura whether Krishna proposed to come to advise the fatherless Pandavas how to get free of the intrigues of Dhritarashtra and his sons. Talking with Akrura about all these affairs, she felt herself helpless and exclaimed, "My dear Krishna, my dear Krishna, you are the supreme mystic, the supersoul of the universe. You are the real well-wisher of the whole universe. My dear Govinda, at this time you are far away from me. Yet, I pray to surrender unto your lotus feet. I am now grief-stricken with my five fatherless sons. I can fully understand that but for your lotus feet, there is no shelter or protection. Your lotus feet can deliver all the aggrieved souls because you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can be safe from the clutches of repeated birth and death only by your mercy. My dear Krishna, you are the Supreme Pure One, the Supersoul, and Master of all Yogis. What can I say? I can simply offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Please accept me as your fully surrendered devotee. Although Krishna was not present before her, Kunti offered her prayers to him as if she were in his presence, face to face. This is possible for anyone following in the footsteps of Kunti. Krishna does not have to be physically present everywhere. He is actually present everywhere by spiritual potency, and one simply has to surrender unto him sincerely. When Kunti was offering her prayers very feelingly to Krishna, she could not check herself, and she began to cry loudly before Akrura. Vidura was also present, and both Akrura and Vidura became very sympathetic to the mother of the Pandavas and began to solace her by glorifying her five sons, Yudhishthir, Arjuna, Bhim, Nakul, and Sahadev. They pacified her, saying that her sons were extraordinarily powerful. She should not be perturbed about them, since they were born of great demigods, such as Yamaraj, Indra, and Vayu. Akrura decided to return home and report on the strange circumstances in which he found Kunti and her five sons. But first, he wanted to give good advice to Dhritarashtra, who was so favorably inclined toward his own sons and unfavorably inclined toward the Pandavas. When King Dhritarashtra was sitting among friends and relatives, Akrura began to address him. Calling him Vaichitravirya. Vaichitravirya means the son of Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya was the name of Dhritarashtra's father. But Dhritarashtra was actually the begotten son not of Vichitravirya, but of Vyasadeva. Formerly, it was the system that if a man was unable to beget a child, his brother could beget a child in the womb of his wife, which was known as Devarena Sutotpati. That system is now forbidden in this age of Kali. Akrura called Dhritarashtra Vaichitravirya sarcastically because he was not actually begotten by his father. He was the son of Vyasadeva. When a child was begotten in the wife by the husband's brother, the child was claimed by the husband, but of course the child was not begotten by the husband. This sarcastic remark pointed out that Dhritarashtra was falsely claiming the throne on hereditary grounds. Actually, Pandu had been the rightful king, and in the presence of Pandu's sons, the Pandavas, Dhritarashtra should not have occupied the throne. Akrura said, My dear son of Vichitravirya, you have unlawfully usurped the throne of the Pandavas. Anyway, somehow or other you are now on the throne. Therefore, I beg to advise you to please rule the kingdom on moral and ethical principles. If you do so, and you try to please your subjects in that way, your name and fame will be perpetual. Akrura hinted that although Dhritarashtra was ill-treating his nephews, the Pandavas, they happened to be his subjects. Even if you treat them not as the owners of the throne, but as your subjects, you should impartially think of their welfare as though they were your own sons. But if you do not follow this principle and act in just the opposite way, you will be unpopular among your subjects. And in your next life, you will have to live a hellish condition. I therefore hope you will treat your sons and the sons of Pandu equally. Akrura hinted that if Dhritarashtra did not treat the Pandavas and his sons as equals, surely there would be a fight between the two camps of cousins. And since the Pandavas' cause was just, they would come out victorious, and the sons of Dhritarashtra would all be killed. This was a prophecy told by Akrura to Dhritarashtra. Akrura further advised Dhritarashtra. In this material world, no one can remain an eternal companion to another. Only by chance do we assemble together in a family, society, community, or nation. But at the end, because every one of us has to give up this body, we must be separated. One should not, therefore, be unnecessarily affectionate toward family members. Dhritarashtra's affection was also unlawful and did not show much intelligence. In plain words, Akrura hinted to Dhritarashtra that his staunch family affection was due to his gross ignorance of fact or his blindness to moral principles. Although we appear combined together in family, society, or nation, each of us has our own individual destiny. Everyone takes birth according to individual past work. Therefore, everyone must individually enjoy or suffer the result of his or her own karma. There is no possibility of improving one's destiny by cooperative living. Sometimes it happens that one's father accumulates wealth by illegal means, and the son takes away the money, although it was earned with great difficulty by the father. Just as a small fish in the ocean eats the material body of the large old fish. Ultimately, one cannot accumulate wealth illegally for the gratification of one's family, society, community, or nation. An illustration of this principle is that many great empires which developed in the past are no longer existing because their wealth was squandered away by later descendants. One who does not know this subtle law of fruitive activities, and who thus gives up the moral and ethical principles, carries with him or her only the reactions of one's sinful activities. One's ill-gotten wealth and possessions are taken by someone else, and he or she goes to the darkest region of hellish life. One should therefore accumulate more wealth than allotted to one by destiny. Otherwise, he or she will be factually blind to his or her own interest. Instead of fulfilling one's self-interest, one will act in just the opposite way for his or her own downfall. Akura continued, "My dear Dhritarashtra, I beg to advise you not to be blind to the facts of material existence. Material conditioned life, either in distress or in happiness, is to be accepted as a dream. One should try to bring the mind and senses under control and live peacefully for spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness." In the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said that except for persons in Krishna consciousness, everyone is always disturbed in mind and full of anxiety. Even those trying for liberation or merging into the Brahman effulgence, and the yogis who try to achieve perfection in mystic power, cannot have peace of mind. Pure devotees of Krishna have no demands to make of Krishna. They are simply satisfied with service to him. Actual peace and mental tranquility can be attained only in perfect Krishna consciousness. Akura continued, "My dear Dhritarashtra, after hearing the moral instructions from Akura, Dhritarashtra replied, "My dear Akura, you are very charitable in giving me good instructions, but I cannot, unfortunately, accept them. A person destined to die does not utilize the effects of nectar, although it may be administered to him. I can understand that your instructions are valuable. Unfortunately, they do not stay in my flickering mind. Just as the glittering lightning in the sky does not stay fixed in a cloud, I can understand only that no one can stop the onward progress of the Supreme Will. I understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has appeared in the family of the Yadus to decrease the burdensome load on this earth." Dhritarashtra hinted to Akura that he had complete faith in Krishna, the Supreme personality of Godhead. At the same time, Dhritarashtra was very partial to his own family members. In the very near future, Krishna would vanquish all the members of his family, and in a helpless condition, Dhritarashtra would take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. To show his special favor to a devotee, Krishna usually takes away all the objects of one's material affection, thus forcing the devotee to be materially helpless, with no alternative but to accept the lotus feet of Krishna. This actually happened to Dhritarashtra after the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Dhritarashtra could realize two opposing factors acting before him. He could understand that Krishna was there to remove all the unnecessary burdens of the world. His sons were an unnecessary burden, and so he expected that they would be killed. But at the same time, he could not rid himself of his unlawful affection for his sons. Understanding these two contradictory factors, he offered his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The contradictory ways of material existence are very difficult to understand. They can be taken only as the inconceivable execution of the plan of the Supreme, who by his inconceivable energy creates this material world and enters into it, and then sets into motion the three modes of nature. When everything is created, he enters into each and every living entity and into the smallest atom. No one can understand the incalculable plans of the Supreme Lord. After hearing this statement, Akura could clearly understand that Dhritarashtra was not going to change his policy of discriminating against the Pandavas in favor of his own sons. He at once took leave of his friends in Hastinapur and returned to his home in the kingdom of the Yadus. After returning home, he vividly informed Lord Krishna and Balaram of the actual situation in Hastinapur and the intentions of Dhritarashtra. Akrura was sent to Hastinapur by Krishna to study these, and by the grace of the Lord, he was successful. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 49th chapter of Krishna, entitled Ill-Motivated Dhritarashtra.
Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Ma. Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Raksha Ma. Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Ma. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Raksha Ma. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Hari Ma. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Hari Ma. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Raksha Ma. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Hari Ma. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama,